Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Wallet Wisdom, a podcast presented by LMCU. If you're new to the show or have been listening for a while now, Wallet Wisdom is designed to help break down some of banking's more complex and confusing questions. I'm your host, Brett, and I can't wait to dive into today's episode. Well, again, we are super excited to have Cedric on the podcast today. Cedric, thanks so much for joining us.
Of course, and thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. You know, for listeners, just to get to know you a little bit more, can you tell us a little bit about what you do for the credit union and even like how long you've been here? Because it's starting to go on several years.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So this year actually marks 8 years with the credit union for me.
Amazing.
Yeah, started back in 2018. I can't believe it's already been that long, to be honest with you. But I'm currently serving as the market leader for our 28th Street and Craft location. I've held just about every single position in the branch besides head teller.
Yeah.
I'm a little more, I don't know if I have the organizational skills for that. I'll just be honest with you.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a blessing. I've enjoyed my ride here so far.
That's amazing. Well, and also for listeners, one of the things that we recently have shifted from is we don't just necessarily call our managers, our branch managers, a branch manager. There's so much more than that. They're a market leader. And I love how that vision has continued to take off with Julie and the team here as well, to really just, kind of bring a better perspective on being a leader in our community. So
absolutely. I think the market leader position itself has just opened so many doors, right? Whether we're getting into schools, teaching financial literacy, whether we're getting out in the community, meeting with our local business owners, or just doing things like this, right?
Right.
Where I'm getting to educate in a different way.
It's so true. And that's a big part, I know, of that position, is helping those that are coming through those doors with whatever financial knowledge or, you know, work that they might be having or need to have done, that you're there every step of the way to kind of, you know, help them understand their finances. So, and I think today is a great topic because we want to dive into, and one that's kind of near and dear to my heart, if I'm being honest. I know for listeners, you've heard me mention about my kids a little bit, but my oldest, my daughter, she's graduating high school this year. And
awesome.
So all the graduation party stuff and everything else that's going. But I know it's a big season for graduation. A lot of college grads are nearing the end of their college time. And, you know, that end of that chapter in life can also feel a little bit daunting because there's the what's next and how do I start to set myself up for real long-term success in the adulting world, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So, I would love to kind of dive into, you know, for you, what would be like one money habit that you would have changed, right, in your life had you been maybe 22, if you had started when you were 22?
Yeah. So ironically enough, 22 is actually when I started here at LMCU.
No kidding.
So that's kind of taking me back to my early days here.
Yeah.
But I think for me, one of the early traps that I think was kind of prevalent then and even more so now is kind of falling into the trap of keeping up with the Joneses. When you see things on social media and you're kind of basing where you are in life based on other people's highlight reel, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just, you know, you see people buying their first home or a new car or things like that. And you're kind of looking at yourself like, well, you know, you see your old car from high school even or college days in the driveway and you're like, man, like I want that. Right. So I think for me, that would probably be the first thing I would tell 22-year-old Cedric is kind of pump the brakes a little bit, kind of evaluate where you're at and be happy running your own race.
For sure. Well, I love that. That's such a great way to say that. Like everyone's on their own journey and it's their own race, you know. And just being able to, you know, pump the brakes a little and understand that, you know, what you're seeing on social media could be an exaggeration. And all too often it is an exaggeration. And it just is not realistic for most individuals that they can just, you know, at 25 own a Ferrari and be able to go all over on these cruises or whatever. Yeah. And so it is tough to not have, what is it? The FOMO, right? That fear 100%. Of missing out. And so I know when I was getting out of the college time, it was about earning too.
Yeah.
Like I just got to earn, I got to earn, and I got to go. And I think there's a component of that that's true. But, you know, I think sometimes it's less about like, how much money can I build up now or just, you know, making that money rather than like, what are some really easy, simple steps or even just some basic paths that I can do to start setting myself up?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I'd love to kind of dive into your thoughts on some of these as well. I really like what you're saying there too, because I think it's also about creating those habits early on that can really start to build momentum in your finances. You know, and I'd love to kind of dive more into that, that component. You know, starting early can often lead to some long-term success. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on some of that as well.
I think the word that kind of jumps out to me is just discipline, right? I mean, everyone can come up with a great, simple, easy budget, but do you have the discipline to stick to it? I know a pretty popular one is kind of there's like the 50-30-20 rule, right? Which is 50% is going towards those needs. So whether it's your groceries every week, your rent or your mortgage payment, or just, again, the necessities that you need to get by week in, week out, right? The 30% of that kind of breaks down into the wants. So those are the travel, the fun stuff, right? Your Starbucks coffee, things like that.
Right.
And the remaining 20% kind of goes towards saving and then also paying off that debt. So that's just kind of a simple one that I followed. I remember when I was first starting out.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly who kind of broke that one down to me, but that was right around the time I had started here, around 22, 23 years old.
Man. Yeah. I think for a lot of those students that are getting out of college now and are entering into the workforce, kind of like what you were saying when you kind of were getting out of college and joining LMCU, you know, there's that first initial like, wow, I'm going to start earning income. And you start to feel like, oh, I got money now. I can go and do some things with this. I can go, you know, out to eat more, all of that. So there's that creep that starts to come in. You know, how can maybe listeners start to kind of put their mind around avoiding some of those pitfalls of those kinds of things happening?
Definitely. Yeah. As I stated, I've been with LMCU for about 8 years. I've held pretty much every position there is to hold in the branch. And fortunately, all of those positions have come with an increase in my earnings as well. So there definitely is that feeling of, you know, if you let it, it can kind of burn a hole in your pocket, so to speak, right? You see that first new check and you're like, all right, awesome. Like, you know, I want to take that new trip. I want to get that new car, whatever it is, right? But sometimes, again, like we said earlier, kind of pumping the brakes is the best way to stop and assess and look at, okay, maybe those student loan payments, maybe I can throw a little extra at that, or maybe I can take down my credit card balances or things of that nature.
I think that's hard is that when you're going through like college and you probably don't have a ton, you're eating ramen noodles and macaroni and cheese and whatever, right? And you're just kind of scraping by to get by. When you start to have that money, you want to naturally start to splurge on yourself. And that's fun.
Yes.
Saving doesn't sound fun, no. Right? It doesn't feel as fun or as good because it's like, oh man, but I want to go out and I want to do this. I think what's a difficult mindset to kind of get over is the short-term discomfort of still remaining, you know, kind of below that line and scraping by so that you can start saving, you can start putting these systems in place and starting to build that early on. It's going to help the future self, right? Yeah, and we talked about that on a few of our previous episodes where it's thinking that mindset of what does future Brett want, right? And what can current present Brett do to accomplish that for him, right? So that then when the time comes in the future, I can look back and say, thanks, past Brett. That was awesome.
Exactly.
But it's not always easy, I think, for us to as humans do that because, you know, it is fun to go and get, you know, a little this or a little that. Moderation is the word that comes to my mind as well. What do you think?
So I think one of the more important things, right, when you're getting those paychecks and when you're getting the money coming in is knowing exactly where to put it, kind of where to park the money, right? A great opportunity that I was introduced to by someone who's a bit of a mentor to myself. Out to Jesslyn. She is another market leader in our Florida locations down there. She actually kind of was the first person to introduce me to the 401k. And for those of you out there who aren't aware, that's typically an employee-sponsored plan where your employer is going to give you free money. They're going to manage the amount that you're putting in to a certain percentage, of course. But that's been an amazing tool on my journey.
For sure. Well, and I'm glad you brought up those 401ks because, you know, I think that when you're thinking about those first initial steps out of college, it's getting that first job or that big career job that you've been working towards. And most places are going to offer that 401k. And I think that's really wise to bring up, because it's that early state, like those early stages of saving and building up that wealth for the retirement time. And I'll be honest, this topic, as we were prepping and thinking about it, it's not easy.
No.
And I think about myself, and I was not good at that. You know, I'm 39 now. And, you know, the statement about like saving early so you don't have to catch up later, I feel like I'm playing catch up now. It's not the best of feelings when you're like, man, I could have been so much farther ahead, right? Had I just been able to understand some of those early concepts. So I hope for those that are listening, whether you're a student or maybe you're a parent or a loved one of a student, that maybe you share this with them and have them understand a little bit. I mean, really, it would have set myself and my family up for a lot better success a lot earlier had I thought about those things. And truly, that employer matching is also a big component. There's opportunities in a lot of places where you can have an employer match, right?
Yeah.
That's like money on the table, you know? 100%. Could you share a little bit about, you know, the 401 and those matching?
And I feel like that's why it's so important as well to be educated, right? Whether it's a friend, family member, or a mentor who kind of gives you that information. Because again, at that point when I was introduced to it, I had been working for a financial institution here for a few years, and I wasn't 100% aware of all the benefits, right, that go into that. I think that really it's just one of those things where we have things like this, right, where we have the podcast where we can spread awareness, whether it's the financial reality fairs that LMCU hosts in our schools, right, where we have the opportunity to get into the classroom and really just share and educate not only our own personal stories, but just the broad and general information.
Thinking about what you were talking about earlier and just kind of how to start thinking about setting up your finances in the buckets, if you will, to start helping yourself in for the future. Part of that's also kind of protecting your foundation that you're starting to build. And I think about a lot of times it's all too missed is an emergency fund. You know, that coming out of college, there's a lot of student loans that you're paying and all the rest, but there's still a necessity to have an emergency fund. And could you take us through like maybe your way of thinking about emergency funds? And, you know, I know some places they'll say, dump a bunch of it into that, but I think there's moderation, and I'd love to hear your points on that.
100%. I think, especially for kind of the age range or like the part of life that we're talking about, fresh out of college, right? I would say even something as simple as $500 to $1,000, right? Something where if there's an emergency with having to go to the doctor's office, or whether a car part goes out on your vehicle or whatever the case may be, right? It doesn't have to be this grand number where it's tens of thousands of dollars you have to have put away, but just like you're starting your own journey with, you know, life and entering into the workforce, just look at that savings, the emergency savings, the same way, whereas you're just getting started. So a couple $100 to $1,000 is really all you need just to get started.
And that's probably also, you know, I think about this time in their life, this is when you probably have the least responsibilities financially and the most opportunities to build up an emergency fund, even if it's $1,000. Because again, thankfully, the youth age also means hopefully you're not getting sick as frequently. We know that that can happen. There's, you know, but the majority and the hope is that you're going to be healthy for a while and you'll be able to, you know, still survive off of ramen for a few more months, maybe. But truly, just to kind of start that perspective of it doesn't take as much as we might think. And I love that. That I know that debunks a lot of myths out there that say you should have like 5,000. And I think it's important to reevaluate probably too, right? And when that time comes to say, yeah, I need a little bit more in my emergency fund now. Yeah.
As you get a little bit deeper into your career, as your earnings go up, obviously, yeah, definitely I'd recommend reevaluating that as well.
For sure.
I think pretty much the rule of thumb for a lot of people is going to be anywhere between like 3 to 6 months of savings. That's really going to get you in a secure place where if something happens with your job, or if there's a serious medical incident, or even as we get older, right, if there's something with our parents or another family member that we might be responsible for, to be able to pitch in with them as well.
For sure. You know, the other thing that can, I know a few people that have had this struggle, unfortunately, is they go to school, they graduate, they have this great diploma and degree, and they can't seem to find a job in that career path right now.
Yeah.
I know some people will get stuck thinking, well, I gotta find a job in my career. Otherwise, you know, what if I miss an opportunity? The perspective of sometimes it might be you've got your degree, and as you're working to find a job there, you might still have to take a job somewhere else temporarily so that you can start building up some of those things too. You know, would you have any suggestions for, you know, some of our soon to be grads on, you know, how to approach that?
For certain. I think the important thing to remember, again, just kind of touching back on what we had spoke on earlier, was just remembering that you're running your own race, and that the specific plan that you might have started with or set off on isn't always where you end up. So just a quick story about myself and how I got started here with the credit union. I was actually going to school for physical therapy, which is completely separate, right, from the finance world. And some of my good friends who are managers here as well, I know a few people who have culinary degrees and psychology degrees.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, unfortunately, sometimes you might get to the end of your college experience and you might have that degree, but that's not always exactly where you're going to end up. To finish my story of how I ended up here, was my mom actually ended up getting her mortgage through LMCU.
No kidding.
And she ended up getting an email just saying that they were hiring. I don't remember exactly how it was formatted. And I was working a management job at a fast food place at the time and still trying to figure out what exactly I was going to do post-college, right? And I was like, okay, I'll give Teller a shot and see what happens.
Sure.
And I mean, 8 years later, here I am.
Right. So, oh my gosh, yeah. That's so cool. That's an awesome story. And it goes to show that you just, where you're at, like you said, on your journey, does not mean that it could be totally different even a week, two, a month, 3 months, a year later, and you're just like, wow, how did I get to this point now? Which is exciting. You know, how can you enjoy, I guess, your 20s while also not allowing that lifestyle creep to like overcome your spending? Because like what you were sharing about, you know, working at a fast food place, trying to, you know, save up and all the rest. I mean, we're still allowed to have some fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, yeah, definitely life is all about balance. And like you said, moderation as well, right? So I think maybe for all my coffee drinkers out there, maybe if you could cut it down from the five, you know, getting coffee
every day.
Don't take my coffee away, Cedric.
No, I'm kidding.
So maybe instead of going to the bigger name brands, whether it's like Starbucks or a Big B, doing it at home.
Yeah.
You know, brewing it at home, grinding it up yourself, making it home. I'm a little inexperienced in the coffee realm myself. We chatted about that earlier.
But, yeah.
I feel like that's just a simple way to cut back.
Do you like my coffee? But you're 100% right. You know, there's a moderation word that I mentioned earlier. And, you know, a coffee or so a week just to treat yourself, that's one way of saying, like, I deserve to be able to have some fun or a splurge. Yeah. But again, you know, like you said, five once every day, maybe, you know, couple a day, like that starts to add up real quick. And that's not sustainable, to your point. But yeah, there's a lot of those things that are out there that if it's just a reduction in how frequently you're doing it, you can still enjoy those moments while still, you know, not breaking the bank.
I think some other common ways, like looking back on my life, I'm a big, especially when I was younger, 20s, was going to concerts.
Sure.
I love going to see shows with friends and going out and things like that. I think regretting maybe some of those like pit or front row experiences that I maybe could have enjoyed from a little bit further back, I think that would have saved me a good chunk of change back in those days. And another thing too, just with kind of growing up in, is clothing as well.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of name brands or designer or fancier clothing, right? But at the end of the day, you can get a quality t-shirt from some of the smaller stores or lesser known brands, and it'll kind of allow you to save a little bit of cash there too.
I like that you said that too, because I know fashion has become a very popular thing as well. And, you know, growing up, I remember there was the battles between the name brands, and you're not wearing the name brand thing. It must not be cool. And, you know, I think you hit it right on the head. There's so many great styles and great clothing at a much lower price. It doesn't have to have, you know, that banana on it or this, you know, whatever on it. It can be its own thing. And, you know, again, it doesn't bring, I don't think personally that your fashion sense brings value to the person that it's clothing.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
It took me a little too long to learn that. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. My parents were definitely more penny pinchers. It was like, we're going to the local department store and we're going to clearance aisles.
I could have used that, I think.
Right. And you know what? For all those young students that might be watching, just know in about 15 years, your style that you think is cool, it won't be cool anymore.
No,
I found that out the hard way.
Yes.
You know? Now everyone's wearing sweatpants again, and there was a point where that was just not cool.
Absolutely,
and
not.
Now everyone's cool that wears them, and I'm not cool because I wear jeans. Anyway, so okay, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk very much about this too, Cedric, but I want to just bring it up briefly. Is, you know, talking about credit scores, and I know that these are those times in a lot of younger people's lives where they're maybe getting their first credit card, or maybe just got a card a couple years prior. You know, building good credit is important. I think credit cards can create some unfortunate bad habits. Or a false sense of wealth because, you know, I got this card with a limit that's, you know, maybe $8,000 and woo, let's go. But could you share a little bit briefly about, you know, just overall the importance of your credit score and just maintaining maybe a good credit, you know, balance?
I feel, when you brought the topic up, I could hear my mom's voice. And I remember even before I was old enough to have credit or lending, right?
Yeah.
Have good credit. Cedric, have good credit. My mom hammered that. Before I even knew what a credit card
was. She sounds wise.
Yes. No, she was great. Absolutely. Shout out to my mom. But I can hear her voice like physically, right? And it was just one of those things where I was kind of scared at first. But especially before I started working here and understanding that credit cards and lending and loans isn't something that's I kind of had in my mind where it's you're being taken advantage of, but you can honestly flip that and say, how can I take advantage of the benefits of these lending products? Right. Yeah. So oftentimes you can find a great card with a lower interest rate for emergencies, or you can find a great card that'll offer cash back. Me personally, I'm a 2-card system kind of guy. I have one for the quick thing that pops up.
Sure.
And then I also have one that, you know, I use for my gas, my groceries, my day-to-day spending. Right.
Yeah.
So I kind of, for me, as far as building credit, right, the number one thing I'd recommend is, and we've used the phrase pump the brakes quite a bit, when you are in your young 20s, you're going to be bombarded by emails, by flyers in the mail, by these brands and companies trying to gain your loyalty.
Yeah.
Because if they can get you now, odds are they'll hold on to your loyalty for a long time.
Right, right.
And so I would just say, do your research, whether it's the big name brands that you get in the mail or whether it's your local credit union.
Yeah, yeah.
To really understand the mission behind the place that's trying to get your business as well. But as far as just jumping back to the actual question itself, I think the number one thing I've learned in my time here with building credit and establishing credit is really keeping a low revolving balance on the card itself.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, let's say just for easy math, you have a $1,000 credit card, right? The general rule of thumb is you want to keep it below 30% of your spending limit. So you want to keep your balance at any given time below $300 on that card. And that's just for easy math, right?
Sure.
That's been a real eye-opener for a lot of the fresh out of high school or fresh out of college students that I've met with, is having that breathing room on your credit card is going to be the best way to boost your score.
And see, that I'm glad you brought up, because that was my biggest pitfall that really set me up for already in a bit of a debt hole, if you will, was shortly after high school, you know, a couple of years into college, I had a credit card. I had actually a total of like 3 of them. One was like what was billed as a student card. So it was like $300 credit limit, which was awesome. There's very few credit cards now that do this, but it was great because I had about a $300 budget for gas and food. So I could use that to build credit. Well, then there's the, you know, shopping card, online Amazon cards, and a different, you know, now my bank is like, here's a credit card now that you're old enough. And so I had these, right? And I went to buy my wife's wedding ring. And I had to unfortunately put it on a card, and it had a super high interest rate. And here's the thing. This is where I wanted to bring, and why I wanted to bring the story up for those that might be listening, to understand that you might be doing something that you think is right, and it does seem right, like what I'm about to explain, but ultimately can create a bigger problem. So high interest rate on this, you know, department style card. I'll consolidate all of that onto a lower interest credit card because I don't need to pay as much. Smart, right? Trying to save interest. Problem, I was almost 100% utilization of my credit limit. And all of a sudden, my credit score was going and getting dinged little by little every month. And here I am thinking I did something smart by bringing it all into a lower interest, you know, kind of thing. However, to your point, and I'm glad you brought up the, like the kind of utilization as we call it, but just that, that amount that you're spending, and that limit, you know, that's a big deal. That can really hurt a credit score quickly.
And I didn't realize that myself before working here as well, just how much that breathing room impacts at having that space between the balance and your actual limit itself. Mm-hmm. So it's that's why for me personally, I like that two card system of having that emergency card for those bigger purchases, but then also just having my spending card is kind of what I call it.
That's smart. That's really smart. Well, you know, as we're starting to wrap up here, I do want to just kind of talk about a few last like three different things around like. Really, the world has changed a lot. Let's be honest, you know, and even from when I was in college to where we are today in 2026, that, you know, it's a lot harder now to save. It's a lot harder with, like you mentioned earlier, all of the emails and the messaging and the social media and all of the different things that are screaming for our attention and our loyalties. And ultimately what they want, the attention and loyalty equals money, right? They want your money. And so, you know, what are, I guess, some different things or maybe even harder things that are happening today for students to get financially secure?
Yeah, I think, I mean, just in general over time with dealing with things like inflation or cost of living going up, that's kind of a big topic right now. I know gas prices are
through the roof. Yes. Unreal.
So I think just going into that again, with as you're navigating life and as you're navigating your time in the workforce, just really managing that paycheck, going back to what we talked about earlier, that 50% going towards the needs and having the discipline to say, okay, I might not be able to go out with my friends this weekend, or I might not be able to book that trip.
Yeah.
But in the long term, right, in the long run, when you're not racking up that credit card balance and you're using the savings or the checking, that's going to help you out quite a bit.
For sure. Well, you know, and also like we were saying earlier about, you know, really kind of protecting that foundation, that financial, you know, blanket or foundation, if you will. There's a lot more, I think, that I know is more difficult and it's starting to, you know, pop up more and more, but all the online like sports gambling sites, you know, that's unfortunately it's had a glow up and it's not the thing that you really want to see all of a sudden becoming popular. But, you know, you're hearing about more and more, you know, college age kids that are getting excited about, you know, sports gambling, you know, and that's concerning. I think that there's this, I guess, willingness to almost throw money away. I know it's tough. You know, some people will say, you know, it's just for fun. And that's cool, but there's a time and place for that.
Right. And fun quickly becomes 6 months of losing a little bit here, a little bit there. Yes. Fortunately for myself, that's not something I've dabbled in too much, but I have a few friends out there that I've heard some rough stories.
Same.
I'll put it that way.
Same. It's funny. I remember my dad taught me this at a young age. We drove by a casino and they were building an addition on. Okay. And he said, do you think that they are able to build that addition because they're giving money away there?
Right.
No. So it always gave me a really good quick understanding that like, you're pretty much going to lose money there. I go to the casinos because they have really good food, to be honest with you.
They've
got a great like buffet with prime rib, and that's where I spend my money. But at least I'm walking away spending only like $40 instead of potentially hundreds in a slot machine.
Right, definitely.
the other thing I wanted to ask you about, cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
That's become popular.
Yes.
But could also, I hear, it's kind of that slippery slope of like, is that where, you know, young students coming out of college should be looking at investing in that right away? Or, you know, tell me a little bit about that.
I think it's just such an untapped market, right? We don't have that like grand or that much research behind it yet. It's one of those things that especially when you're talking about like the Bitcoins, the Ethereums, things like that. I'll speak to a few years ago. I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a big trend or big thing. NFTs were like a big thing.
Yeah.
People buying, whether it's like artwork or these things online. Right?
I was just old enough to not understand it.
No, it's probably for the best because you don't really hear about them anymore.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I had quite a few friends who had kind of fallen into that where you think you're making an investment, but you don't really understand what you're putting your money into. And unfortunately, things didn't necessarily turn out the way they were hoping for.
Yeah.
But another common thing, speaking to Bitcoin specifically, we've seen a rise in Bitcoin ATMs, whether they're in gas stations or malls or just common areas, right? Where it's one of those things where once your money goes into there, it's gone. It's similar to a wire. It's if you're not sending it or investing into a trusted source, one that you've fully confirmed.
Sure.
And the financial institutions, we unfortunately, it's been taken out of our hands.
Right.
We're unable to assist. So I guess my general, I guess, advice when it comes to cryptocurrency is just really do your research. Really understand that whether it's an app or a website or those physical locations, right, that you really understand exactly what you're signing up for.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you saying that. We touched a little bit on that in an episode a few months back now, around the Bitcoin ATMs and this kind of growing, that's right, it was around our scams and fraud that's out there. For those that are listening, tune into that one as well. Josh Wolf on our team telling us about fraud and just kind of hearing about how, unfortunately, with all things, they can be used for good and they can be used for bad. And I think that there are higher risks that are associated that come with that. But that's always good to kind of be like, hey, might be a red flag. Do your research, you know? Absolutely.
Anytime, and I'll just kind of close that part with this. Anytime someone is telling you to make an investment and then when you come in to make withdrawal, I want to speak specifically to the Bitcoin ATMs.
Yeah.
If someone's telling you to come in and withdraw cash and to lie to the teller or to lie to the banker that's in front of you, not to make this a fraud episode, but it's important.
It's good. It's so important these days.
That is a massive red flag. No one from LMCU or from a trusted source is going to advise you to lie to your bank, to lie to your credit union.
Yeah.
So that's just one thing to keep an eye out. It's probably the worst part of the job is when we handle a withdrawal for somebody and then a week later they come in emotional and distraught because they've given away. I mean, we've seen tens of thousands plus gone just like that.
And I think, again, what we did chat a little bit about with Josh too is it is what you're saying that not only just don't talk to a teller, they'll advise you don't talk to your family members. Don't talk. Basically, they don't want you to talk to anyone that could provide you with that, you know, maybe the realistic perspective or a sensible, you know, kind of alternative. It's tough. It really 100%. Is. It really is. You know, I've been wanting to get to this all episode long because you've mentioned this a few times. And, you know, I think social media has become quite a, it's our communication tool. It's beyond that. It's entertainment. It's everything now. Many of these apps have moved to even like an online shopping market within their social media channel. And so, you know, what started out as, hey, keeping up with some friends from college has now turned into let's throw every ad in front of, you know, as many people as possible. Just some stats that I had pulled. So 40% of young adults feel pressure to spend money because of what they see on social media. And also studies have shown that over 50% of the Gen Z and millennials have made impulse purchases directly from social media, right?
I think those percentages are probably a little bit higher for all being honest with ourselves if we're answering.
Right, right. Exactly. And, you know, the reason I want to touch on this is you've mentioned about like pumping the brakes.
Yeah.
And I think that impulse buying and just because of the nature of how these programs and apps are designed, it is repetitive. It's in your face. How many times, listeners, have you been going through your phone and you've seen the same ad every few minutes? It's the same one you scroll by again. And they or you've looked at one thing and all the competitors who do the same thing, right? They're now throwing you and the algorithms know, right? So there is a perspective that there's more being thrown at us and a higher level of like pressure to want to purchase some of these things.
I feel like it's gotten to a point now I see more ads or influencers trying to sell me something than I even see my own friends and family at this point. It's gotten to that
great point.
Yeah,
it's true. You go through your feed, what used to be, you know, pictures of all the fun stuff. Right. You're, you know, every two pictures, you're now like, I don't know, Sour Patch candies exactly. or whatever, you know.
Now our ads will all be Sour Patch ads.
I know. You're welcome, everyone. No. So when you talk about pumping the brakes, could you give us some kind of tangible maybe advice as to here I am. Oh my gosh, I got to get that new camera that just dropped. And so I'm going and I'm clicking and it's in my cart and I'm ready to purchase. What would you tell me?
I think for those of us in relationships, I think maybe going to consult your partner sometimes is a good way to go about doing
that's
it.
Good advice.
That's helped me in the past.
Yeah.
But just, I guess, more of like a broader general rule is like we've referenced the pumping the brakes aspect of it. Put it in the cart and save it for a minute, whether you sleep on it a day or two, whatever the case may be. And sometimes you kind of stop yourself and think, okay, I don't need another hoodie. I don't need another pair of sneakers or whatever, another bag of Sour Patch.
Right.
But I think, again, just sticking with that theme of just take a moment, breathe. Do I really need this? Is it really necessary?
Right.
So,
when I've even heard some of it, like, is this going to give like life to me or is it going to take life from me kind of thing? And just, is it really helping or hurting me in that space? You know?
It's become so easy with some of the delivery services. I heard online that Amazon in some cities is launching like a 1 hour delivery window.
Goodness.
Now. So, I mean, you can order it and things are, you don't even have to go to the store anymore. It's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. I'm trying to think of, I can think of a few possibly good use cases, but most of them are all just like, no, I need it now kind of stuff.
Right.
And, you know, patience is okay. Actually, patience is a virtue if people would know that.
And one other thing for me personally, I've stayed away almost entirely from like the food delivery apps. And I know that has saved me. I don't even want to know how much money, because oftentimes, you know, you have a craving like, oh, whatever, this sounds good. The sandwich, the shake,
right,
the smoothie, whatever. And having to drive and get up, I know this, I'm kind of exposing myself as a little lazy here, but
no,
that has saved me. Not wanting to make the trip has saved me from wasting quite a bit of money.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm glad you brought that up, because the convenience for a while, I was all in on it. Like, oh, I don't have to go anywhere. I could just keep playing my video game or whatever. And I'll tell you how much it adds up quick. If you're ordering off of any of these delivery services for your food or whatnot, I'm just like, I'm going to go get my own pizza.
Yes.
You know, part of it is also for listeners, you know, I live literally a mile away from the pizza place, less than.
Oh,
I could probably walk there if I really had the energy, right? So there's no reason I need to have, you know, that delivered, but I sure did a lot until I finally said, okay, I could save $10. You know, I think when these apps first started, you know, I'm showing my age, but then they first started, it was like $1.50 or $2 for a delivery plus a tip. So you might be walking away with $8 you spent for that delivery. Okay, big whoop. Now it's like $18 plus a service fee plus the tip that's mandatory. It's like,
you're going to pay more than double than what you're actually paying for.
Right. It's not worth it at that point. It's not worth it at that point. Cedric, as we are kind of wrapping up, you know, for listeners, what are kind of those simple three maybe steps that can really start to already build that savings and to really kind of help people achieve the future success they're looking for in their finance?
I think the three major, or even like the three most simple steps that you could take, is really just getting that emergency fund saving started. Like we said in the beginning, even as small as $500 to $1,000. And as time goes on, just keep evaluating that as your earnings and your income go up. Just toss a little bit more extra into that just to be prepared for life's big moments, right? The second thing I would say is kind of get into contact with whoever runs payroll, or just learn a little bit more about the employer match through your company. That's free money, like we said, on the table. It's going to set you up for success down the road. That's more long term, but starting it early is truly the key.
It compounds, you know, and that's the thing too, that, you know, we didn't really touch a lot on, but, you know, just knowing that like hundreds now will equate not just a couple thousands later, it will be you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars later. It's crazy, the stat. It's like, if you start saving at 25 versus 35, right? It's like a difference of almost $500,000. And it's just, that's multiplication for you.
And that's contributing the same amount or even more. If you're at that later point, it's still not going to add up.
Right.
I think I read that if you're starting at around 21 or 22, something as small as putting away $50 every single week, if you can manage that, of course, through the ages of 21 all the way up to 65, that's going to put you on target to be right around that $1 million number.
That's which incredible.
Which is, we're talking about $50. So
yeah, no kidding. That's, I mean, incredible how that can multiply like that. Going back to like those three steps, so I love that. So, you know, get that savings account up, you know, start looking at what you can do with your 401k and what your employer matches. And what's the third one?
Yeah, the third and final one is really just automating that direct deposit or where the money's going. It helps out with that, the word discipline we used earlier, right? It kind of takes it out of your hands. We offer plenty of systems here where when that direct deposit hits, we can actually set it up for you to automatically go into my vacation account, my spending account, my bills account, whatever you want to label it. I think our system can hold up to 99 shares or something like
that. That's what I've heard too. Yeah. It's crazy how much.
We kind of can take that temptation out of your hand too. We have systems in place that can help you out with that.
We do. And I'm glad you brought that up too, because we've had a few of our members in the past, I again, get the opportunity to hear their stories and capture their testimonies and to share that with, you know, our audience as well. But that's what they've shared, is they've almost done the envelope system in a digital way, which I think it makes sense. It's bringing both systems into focus. And so to know that you can allocate where that direct deposit's going into the savings and into all of these other little sub savings accounts. Also, I think it's important for our listeners to know, you know, some places will charge a fee for a bunch of little sub savings accounts like that. LMCU, we don't do that. All of those sub savings accounts we're talking about, that's just free. You can open up to 99 of them, like yes. You said. And it's a really great system just to start getting into the habit. I wish that I would have done some of that earlier on. It's again, that's that catch up and trying to build that behavior and that habit later in life is so much harder than just starting it early and staying disciplined while you can. Because again, like we mentioned, right now there's probably the least likely chance in your age at 22 to 25 that you have as much financial responsibilities as those that are older than that. And so this is an opportunity, a huge one.
It's kind of funny looking back now when how stressed out maybe we were about money back then.
Right.
And looking back, it's like, wait a minute, I did not have it that bad.
Right? No kidding.
Enjoy it. Enjoy how it is now.
Enjoy it is right. Exactly. So, well, you know, Cedric, I so appreciate you making time and being on the show today. And, you know, I'd love it for listeners to know too, like, if you've got questions about any of the stuff we've talked about or how to set up a direct deposit, how to set up some savings accounts, or really just even thinking about a budget, maybe that's the first step in all of this, you know, stop by a branch, talk to Cedric, talk to your market leaders that are around the area. And if you don't have an LMCU nearby, give us a call. We've got an incredible call center group that will happily handle and help get you to the right person and get you all that information. So yeah,
I couldn't agree anymore. I always joke with members who kind of peek their head into my office or pop in and they say, are you busy? Do you have a moment? And I always kind of respond with we're kind of waiting for you.
That's right.
Doors are open.
That's right.
Come see us. Come check us out. So if you're not coming in to see us, we're just waiting for you to come in.
I love it. I love it. So, well, we'll have to have you on a little bit again later in the year, or maybe next year we'll have you chat a little bit more about this. Awesome. Thanks, Cedric.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. If you've got questions or ideas for future podcast episodes, be sure to drop them in the comments below. Also, if you haven't already, consider subscribing and ringing that bell to stay up to date on future episodes on YouTube. You can also like and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you on the next one.